My name is John Davis. Today is Wednesday, 29th of January, 2014, and I'm about to interview Mr. Lionel Lane. Lionel, would you please introduce yourself and tell me when and where you were born?
I was born in Maysmore on January the 25th, 1918. Unfortunately, my birthday was last Saturday when I was 96.
Wonderful. Lionel, what years did you work at Fielding and Platt?
I joined Fielding and Platt in 1935 and then worked in the cost office and went on to do several jobs in the works until Harry Bedford was made works manager. He then took on Bill Meadows as progress manager, and I was then invited by Bill Meadows to join him on his staff.
What was your final occupation at the company then, Lionel, or your principal occupation?
My principal occupation was in the progress office under Bill Meadows, and then as time went on, I worked with Danny Wakefield in the top machine shop, whereby we organised the progress of manufacturing items fed into the fitting shops. Bill Meadows did manage the major items. I was responsible for getting the smaller items into the fitting shops.
Well, can we go back to the beginning now, Lionel? How did you first learn about Fielding and Platt?
My father was friendly with George Collinborne. He was then working at... what was he doing? He was estimating, I think, I'm not sure. And he invited me to join Fielding and Platt, which I did, as stated, in October 1935.
Did was there anything you did at school that sort of wanted to prompt you to go towards engineering, Lionel? Was it any lessons that you did? Or?
No, not really.
Okay, so did you have to have an interview about starting work?
No, I was interviewed by George Collinborne at the time, and he was quite satisfied, and I was taken on working under his directions. It was during the period that after 35 working through the shops, in the light machine shop, heavy machine shop, etc., etc., that I then worked under Bill Meadows, who was then a progress manager.
Was it considered an apprenticeship that you started?
No, not at that time it wasn't. It was mentioned, but at that time nothing was done about it.
Okay, you said you lived in Maysmore. How did you travel to work, Lionel?
Ah, that's when I was born. I lived at Maysmore. At that time I joined Fielding and Platt, I was living at Churcham. And at that time the only way to get in to work at that time, starting at 7:30, was cycling. And we cycled into Gloucester and back from Gloucester. If it was wet, you took your clothes over to the brass foundry and you had them dried out.
Okay, so you cycled in. What can you remember about that journey, Lionel? What about the interesting sites along the way, factories, shops, or whatever?
Well, it's It was mainly farming country. We came along the main road from Churcham to Gloucester via Hoover, and then we walked down to, we rode down to Fielding and Platts. As it was then, at Fielding and Platts, when I was there, I think there was four cars, mainly done by the driven by the directors. Later on, there was two more cars. One was owned by Jock McKenzie, the other was Bertie Lee, and all the rest of the people there cycled to and from work.
Well, that was the norm in those days, wasn't it? Were there any other factories that you remember around about Fielding and Platt?
The other factories around Fielding and Platt at that time was S.J. Moreland's, Gardner's, Gloucester Railway and Wagon Company, carpet, I can't think of the name of them, carpet manufacturers, and Barron's was, W.S. Barron's with the...
So when work finished and all those factories turned out, it must have been...
bedlam. Absolute bedlam. Yes.
Okay, so you were... Well, Lionel, having arrived at work, did you have to clock in?
Yes, we clocked in every morning. And I clocked in at Jack Morris's time clock. And if you were late, you were normally stopped a quarter of an hour. And it was in those days that I learnt my first lesson of timekeeping from Mr. May, who was then foreman of the oil engine shop. And I reported that Mr. Morris had locked me out. I had to report to him at quarter to eight, and he would book me in at that time, and I would lose a quarter hour. Mr. May immediately informed me that as I was a quarter of an hour late, the best thing I could do at that time was to go home, go to bed, make sure I had enough sleep, and make sure I was at work next morning at 7:30.
Is that a fact? Lionel, tell me, what form did clocking in take in those days?
The clocking in was a dial shop clock, and there was a swinging arm on the clock, and you had a number, and you clocked in on those numbers.
Can you remember what your number was?
Oh, Christ, no. No, I can't. I can't.
Never mind, never mind. What about the working hours, Lionel?
The working hours was up past 7 till 5, up past 7 to 12 on a Saturday.
Right, so that was what, that was a 48-hour week, was that?
48-hour week, yeah.
I don't suppose you could remember what your first week's wage was, can you?
As far as my memory is concerned, it was eight and sixpence. 8 shillings and sixpence.
Goodness me, that didn't go very far then.
Wonderful wage. Wonderful wage. Wonderful wage that was. Kids, wasn't a lot of money. I mean, a journeyman at that time was earning 38 shillings, that was the machinist. A fitter was earning 40 shillings. And a pattern maker was earning 42 shillings.
That's fair enough. Okay, you've clocked in.
I can tell you something else at that time. That when you were an apprentice, it was normal, under normal circumstances, that when you came out of your time at 21, you immediately left Fielding and Platts, got another job, and you weren't allowed back until you were done 2 years outside the factory.
Is that a fact? Okay. Okay.
Remembering at that time, the light machine shop was run entirely by apprentices. There was a foreman there, which was Tom Going.
You've clocked in. Now, what were your feelings when you entered that factory for the first time, Lionel? The sights, the smells, the noise, what can you remember about that?
Most impressed, the big impression of you entering the factory at that time was the belt-driven machinery. This was driven by the diesel engines. It's the top end of the shop. I don't know what you call it then. You know, the top end of the shop. And they drove all the belt of machinery, you know, down to the lathes and all the paraphernalia, borers and all the paraphernalia. It was all driven by...
So it could have been pretty dangerous then if you stepped in the wrong place or put your hand in the wrong place?
You didn't have to worry about things like that. There was no health and safety rules there in those days. There was one episode that I should remember and never forget. I don't know if they remember it, anybody remembers it in those days, but people, the kids, the apprentices, that during the summer, if it got a little bit hot, somebody would endeavour to put a spanner in the works and bring the shaft into a halt. And then, of course, they would make a dive down the to the canals, and they'd have a dip in the... I mean, this is something that I don't know whether anybody... I remember it well. And on this particular day, I was walking down the shop, and Blondie Woodward... Do you remember Blondie Woodward? If they were in the light machine shop, they used to go up to Jugglers, up at the... across a roof, down the other side of the factory and come out in the Black Road, then down, what is it? Well, something went wrong and he came through the roof. And the only thing that saved him were the glacier bars, the glazier bars, you know. He got his arms out and he managed to put himself back up onto the main shafting, on the moon roof. And it frightened me to death. It frightened me to death when I walked in that shop and I saw him. I honestly thought he was coming down. And nothing was... very few knew about it because there weren't many saw it. And, of course, he come back. He was all right, no trouble at all. He just laughed. Oh, it was just one of those things, you know. One of those peculiar things that happened. But they had some good fun in those days. I know it was beginning to get war beginning to raise its ugly head. What was the main products then? You ought to know, John. Stone plants, accumulators for the stone plants. There was pipe benders. There was turnover capstans. Apart from that, there was what else did we have? The vertical extrusion presses, as you say, plate benders. Forging presses. There was a big 4,000 ton forging press that went down to Bristol Aircraft Company. That big plate bender you on about that went to, and of course they were doing the cupping and drawing presses, 125 ton presses for the shells, 3.7, 4.5 shells. All of that, you know, it was coming on then, you know, in 37, 38, 39. And as you know, war broke out in 39.
Just going back a little stage, Lionel.
I volunteered with Harry and Bill Meadows. Well, we both went down to Porthcawl for the forces, for the aircraft, RAF. Aye. Got turfed out. Come back. They only wanted rear gunners, I think it was.
You mentioned just a moment ago, Lionel, about the guy falling through the roof, etc. Were any first aid facilities available at that time?
Yes, Fred Roach. He was in charge of the stores. He was the ambulance chap there. That was the only chap there was there.
No bit of canteen in those days.
No canteen at all.
So you had whatever you had, you had to bring it in yourself.
Well, most of them lived around the. A lot of people lived. I mean, locally, if you understand what I mean. And then there were other people like me and Bertold Wood come from Hartbury, in outside the factory, you know. And some travelled by motorboat later on, I think. But then when they recruited, a lot of women came into the factory. There was a lot of people come from the Forest of Dean. There was buses that brought them in, buses that took them down to the factories down at the MOD factories down at Air Force factories, you know. Quedgley, that's the name of the place I was trying to think of. And, of course, women came into the factory in 1939.
What capacity did they work in, Lionel?
What, the ladies? Mainly some on the drills. On the cranes. Yes, there was a couple of ladies worked the 40-ton crane that we had in there after. And some of them worked sweeping up and doing the general.
What about security? The war started, okay. Was there any particular security? You have to have any passes or anything like that?
Yes, we had passes. All out, we had passes. We had a gatekeeper. Lance Pitt was... Lance Pitt ran the army cadets at that time. I was in the Royal Observer Corps at that time. I joined those because I was keen on the Air Force, but I didn't go in the Air Force eventually. I joined the Army.
So, do you actually say you... Was this a part-time occupation?
At night time, yes. Only at night time I did the observer.
You were eventually doing fire watching and things like that, were you?
No, because I was in the Royal Observer Corps... I was exempt from fire watching, you know.
And what about, was there a home guard there, Lionel? Yeah.
Yes, well, there was a home guard. The Lance Pitt run the home guard. Yes. I don't know. Did Bob join them, did he? No, there was a lot of it. And of course, there was Hussars, a lot of our chaps joined the Hussars before the war, you know. A lot of our fitters and machinists and all. The Lance Pitt had quite a few people in there. And they were all called up when the war broke out. And, of course, they were back within quite a few weeks. A lot of them come back because we were under MOD then. We were under armaments production.
During those wartime years, Lionel, were there any air raid shelters provided for the staff?
Not to my knowledge, there's no air raid shelters whatsoever.
Well, it was mentioned, someone we talked to previously, about the crypts of the old church being used.
I may not have been there at the time.
Okay, fair enough then. Did the company suffer any bomb damage or fires or anything like that?
No, none whatsoever. Incendiary fires, no. Not to my knowledge, none whatsoever.
Sorry, couldn't have been too serious. Did you travel at all, Lionel, as part of your work during those war years?
No, we didn't. No, none whatsoever.
Okay, so obviously people did. They went out to install presses, etc., and obviously your position kept you back at the factory.